Chapter 32 continued. However, he did not leave a single foot of the granite wall unexamined, even though it was as impenetrable as futurity. He did not notice a single crack without putting the blade of his knife into it, or a lump jutting out of the surface without pressing it, in the hope that it would give way. But all was futile, and he spent 2 hours on this fruitless search. After that, he gave up. Gaetano was triumphant. When Franz returned to the shore, the yacht was only a little white dot on the horizon. He tried his glass, but even with that, it was impossible to make anything out. Gaetano reminded him that he had come here to hunt the goats, something that he had completely forgotten. He took his gun and began to scour the island like a man accomplishing a duty rather than one enjoying a pleasure. After a quarter of an hour, he had killed a goat and 2 kids. But though the goats were as wild and as shy as chamois, they bore too great a resemblance to the domestic variety, and Franz did not consider them true game. And anyway, there were far more powerful ideas on his mind. Since the previous evening, he had effectively been the hero of a tale from the 1001 Nights, and he was irresistibly drawn back to the cave. So even though the first investigation had failed, he began a second one, after telling Gaetano to have the 2 kids roasted. The second visit must have lasted a fairly long time, because when he returned, the kid was cooked and the meal was ready. Franz sat down on the spot where, the evening before, they had come to invite him to supper with this mysterious host, and he could still see the little yacht, like a seagull rocking on the crest of a wave, continuing on its path to Corsica. "But Gaetano," he said, "you informed me that Milord Sinbad was heading for Malaga. Well, it seems to me that he is going directly towards Porto Vecchio." "Don't you remember?" the master said. "My telling you that, with his crew, they were for the time being 2 Corsican bandits?" "Of course. So is he going to put them off on the coast?" "Just as you say." "Ah," Gaetano exclaimed. "There's a man who doesn't fear either God or the devil, so they say. And who would go 50 leagues out of his way to help a poor soul? That sort of help could get him into trouble with the authorities of the country, where he performs this kind of philanthropic deed," Franz said. "Huh, the authorities," said Gaetano. "What does he care about the authorities? He couldn't give a damn for them. Let them just try to catch him. To start with, his yacht is not a ship, it's a bird, and he could gain 3 knots on a frigate for every 12. Then he is only to put off at the coast himself. He'd find plenty of friends of his own there." What was most clear in all this was that Milord Sinbad, Franz's host, had the honor to be associated with every smuggler and bandit on every coast around the Mediterranean, which could only make his position seem even more peculiar. As for Franz, there was nothing further to keep him on Monte Cristo, since he had lost all hope of finding the secret of the cavern. So he hastened to finish his lunch while ordering the men to prepare the boat for when he was ready. Half an hour later, he was on board. He cast a final glance at the yacht. It was about to vanish into the Gulf of Porto Vecchio. He gave the signal to depart. At the moment when his boat set off, the yacht disappeared. With it vanished the last link with the reality of the previous night: the supper, Sinbad, the hashish, and the statues. All were beginning for Franz to merge into a single dream. The boat sailed all day and all night. The next morning, at sunrise, it was the island of Monte Cristo itself that had disappeared. Once Franz had landed, he put aside all memory of recent events, at least temporarily, in order to complete his personal and social affairs in Florence and concentrate on joining his friend who was waiting in Rome. So he left for there, and on that Saturday evening, arrived by stagecoach, on the Piazza della Dogana. As we mentioned earlier, the apartment was already reserved, so there was nothing to be done except to repair to Signor Pastrini's establishment. This was less easy than it sounds. The streets were jammed with people, and Rome was already a prey to the dull, feverish hum that precedes great events. And in Rome, there are four great events in the year: Carnival, Holy Week, Corpus Christi, and the Feast of St. Peter. The rest of the year, the city slumps back into its melancholic apathy, a limbo between life and death, which makes it comparable to a kind of stopping place between this life and the next, but a sublime stopping place, full of character and poetry, that Franz had experienced 5 or 6 times before, and which, each time, he had found more marvelous and more fantastic than the last. At length, he managed to make his way through the swelling and increasingly expectant crowd and reached the hotel. At his first request, he was told, with that impertinence which is peculiar to cab drivers when they have already been booked and innkeepers whose establishments are full, that there was no more room for him in the Hotel de Londres, whereupon he sent his card up to Signor Pastrini and asked to be announced to Albert de Morcerf. This tactic succeeded, and Signor Pastrini hurried down in person, begging pardon for having kept His Excellency waiting, scolding his staff, snatching the candlestick from the hand of the guide who had already taken charge of the traveler, and preparing to conduct him to Albert when the latter himself came to meet him. The apartment they had rented consisted of 2 little rooms and a study. Both bedrooms overlooked the street, a feature that Signor Pastrini emphasized as enormously enhancing their worth. The remainder of the floor was rented to a very rich gentleman, believed to be a Sicilian or a Maltese. The hotelier could not say precisely to which of the 2 nations the traveler belonged. He was called the Count of Monte Cristo. "Very well, Signor Pastrini," said Franz, "but we shall immediately need some kind of supper for this evening and a baroche for tomorrow and the following days." "As to the supper," said the innkeeper, "you shall have it at once. But regarding the baroche..." "What? What? What regarding the baroche?" Albert exclaimed. "Hold on now one moment. We are not joking, Signor Pastrini. We shall need a baroche." "Monsieur," said the innkeeper, "everything possible will be done to procure one for you. I cannot say more than that." "And when shall we know?" asked Franz. "Tomorrow morning," answered the innkeeper. "Damnation," said Albert. "All this means is that we shall pay dearer for it. You know how it goes. From Drake or Aaron, 25 francs on ordinary days and 30 or 35 on Sundays and holidays. Add 5 francs a day as your own fee, and we are in the round 40 francs. I very much fear that the gentleman would not be able to find such a vehicle for double that amount." "Well, then, find some horses and harness them to my own. It is a little the worse for wear after the journey, but no matter. You won't find any horses." Albert looked at Franz like a man who has just been given an incomprehensible answer. "Do you understand this, Franz? No horses. But what about post horses? Aren't there any of those?" "All hired a fortnight ago. All that is left are those which are absolutely essential for the mail." "What do you say to that?" asked Franz. "I say that when something is beyond my comprehension, I am in the habit of not wasting any more time on it, but of turning to something else. Is the supper ready, Signor Pastrini?" "Yes, Excellency." "Well, then, let's dine first of all." "But what about the baroche and the horses?" asked Franz. "Don't worry about them, my dear friend. They will come of their own accord. It is simply a matter of finding a price." At which Morcerf with that admirable philosophy that believes nothing impossible so long as it feels its purse to be fat and its wallet full, supped, went to bed, fell instantly fast asleep, and dreamt that he was prancing through the carnival with a carriage and 6 horses. We've run out of time for this hour of The Count of Monte Cristo by Alexandre Dumas, translated by Robin Buss. We'll pick up right where we left off in the next episode. My name is Kelly Wall from North Carolina Reading Service, providing news and information for individuals who are blind or print impaired. Our website is ncreadingservice.org. If you have questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138.